Want to get more from Killer Psyche? Subscribe to Wondery Plus for early access to new episodes, ad-free listening, and exclusive content you cannot find anywhere else. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. A listener note, this episode contains adult content and is not suitable for everyone. Please be advised. Romance novelist Nancy Brophy focused her books on women who kill their abusive husbands and then find happiness elsewhere. Those self-published novels and a 2011 blog post she wrote titled How to Murder Your Husband proved to be a thorn in Nancy's side when she was put on trial for the murder of her husband, Dan. When Dan was murdered in 2018 at his place of work, suspicion immediately turned toward Nancy, not just for her works of fiction, but also an incredible amount of circumstantial evidence. Today's headline is courtesy of KOIN 6 News, Portland.
Beaverton romance novelist and convicted murderer Nancy Crampton Brophy has been sentenced to life in prison. In 2018, Daniel Brophy was found shot to death in his classroom at the Oregon Culinary Institute. A jury found Crampton Brophy guilty of second-degree murder last month, saying she had killed her husband.
On this week's Killer Psyche, we go into depth about Dan's murder and Nancy's psyche. Today, we are talking with Heidi Trethewey, a Portland, Oregon-based novelist who narrates the new Wondery podcast, Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy. Heidi was in the same writing group as Nancy and has the unique perspective of knowing her before she committed murder. Heidi joins me to talk about Nancy's behavior before and after the murder and her possible motive to kill her husband. Heidi, what is it about Nancy that you think the media missed during her arrest and subsequent trial?
I think the media often sensationalizes this because she was a romance writer. But really, she was a storyteller. And for her, she was the main character, right? She's the main character in her own mind. And that, I think, is part of what compelled her to want to take the stand in her own defense and want to weave a story. Even I can imagine that her defense team was probably cringing when she would go on and on and on with her answers. She seemed to have an answer to everything that the prosecution would ask her, but often that was to her detriment.
I noticed in the show that I watched, she was on the stand in her own defense, always a mistake. And the prosecutor said, blah, 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 blah. This is what happened. And she goes, well, that's your version.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, she said, frankly, I think that your case is held together with Band-Aids.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. She got a bit adversarial. And then also you would find the prosecutor frequently pulling her back. Like she'd get ahead of him and he'd say, now, hang on. We got to take this step by step. Let's go back to the next question that I have.
Well, you know who does that? Narcissist. And there's an interesting thing about juries. They don't like it when defendants get flippant and combative with people just doing their job, like the prosecutor or the judge. But let's move on. What questions are you trying to answer in your podcast?
I think one of the first questions we ask is, was Nancy confusing fiction with reality? Because if you look at the fiction that she's written, her books often center on women killing their spouses. And generally, they're in very bad marriages. Their husband is a hitman or an assassin, right? And so she's trying to get out of that bad relationship. She kills her husband. She gets away with it. And then she rides off into the sunset with a Navy SEAL and his chiseled abs. So The first question is, was she confusing fiction with reality? And I think that we've answered that no. She really understood what she was doing. She understood what reality is. But then some more questions came up, like, could investigators find clues to the real murder in the pages of Nancy's novels? And ultimately, what the prosecution put forward was this merely research for her writing? Because she even, you know, acquired a ghost gun, called it a toy for writing. Or was it calculated planning? And so fundamentally, we're answering the question, could Nancy orchestrate a murder in the same way that she plotted it in one of her books? She thought she could successfully. Mm-hmm. And I think we answered that she ultimately couldn't.
You have a background as a crime reporter, and you've covered some pretty grisly murders. How is this one different?
Oddly, you're not going to see a lot of blood and guts in this murder, right? This is a weirdly clean, almost hit-style killing, where Nancy shot her husband Dan once in the back, and he fell to the ground paralyzed, and then again in the chest. And then what police remarked on was just how lacking the crime scene was of evidence. There was no sign of a struggle, no sign of a theft. His wallet, his phone, everything was still intact. And so generally, when I would go reporting on murders, things were very messy. Evidence was everywhere. And I could ask lots and lots of questions to the police, and they would have quite a lot to say. And in this case, the investigators didn't immediately have anything to go on, and it wasn't until they went across the street to a pizza shop and found this grainy, horrible black and white video footage and found what looked like Nancy's minivan driving around the murder scene at about the time of the murder that they started to think, oh, this is not a grieving widow. This person could be suspect number one.
Now, in the podcast, we learn a few things about Nancy. One was she's very outgoing, social, and talkative. Dan was kind of a polar opposite. He was extremely quiet and reserved, and he preferred spending time alone in the woods. He was a chef. He'd go foraging for mushrooms, or he'd just sit down and enjoy a good book about marine biology or gardening. Outside of his iPhone, he barely used technology, while Nancy bought a new laptop every year. Were they an unlikely couple, similar to a couple in her stories?
I think they were very much opposites attract. That's what all of her friends and Dan's son had said, that they were opposites attract. But the other thing was, it seemed to work. In witness after witness, in friend after friend's account, no one said that it was an unhappy marriage. And they were together nearly 25 years with no sign of that opposites attract clashing beyond your random minor complaint, oh, he's acquiring too much stuff, oh, his chickens are driving me crazy, those kinds of things.
Nancy, at one point, claimed that she didn't remember the morning of the murder, where she was or anything, because she had retrograde amnesia. Very interesting, because almost always amnesia is caused by trauma to the brain. Trauma can take many forms, can be lack of oxygen, can be caused by a medication or a drug or alcohol or an injury. And she's saying, without any of those excuses or reasons, that she had amnesia. Do you think she really thought she did, or was she lying?
I absolutely think she was lying. My evidence for this is listening back to the tape of the death notification, where she is speaking to the police. She says to them, I was at home. They say, your husband is Dan. She says, Daniel Craig Brophy. Like, she knows his middle name. She's very with it. And the only place where she makes a mistake is she refers to having a gun, and she says this shooter thingy, a trigger. And it's like, come on, Nancy, you have written many, many romantic suspense novels. Shooter thingy is preschool, right? Like, this is the most obvious thing, this idea of a trigger. And so she it's almost like she's pretending that she's forgotten that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. In 2011, so about 6 or 7 years before the murder, Nancy wrote a blog post
and she called it How to Murder Your Husband. A lot is being made of that. She wrote, and I quote, "I find it is easier to wish people dead than to actually kill them." I have to tell you, really, Nancy? And how would you know? But let's move on. Back to her quote. "I don't want to worry about blood and brains spattered on my walls. And really, I'm not good at remembering lies. But the thing I know about murder is that every one of us have it in him or her when pushed far enough." What do you think about that? Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree. That is perhaps Nancy's worldview. It's absolutely not mine. And if you were to say, yes, but could you pull the trigger if somebody was threatening your children? That's not murder.
Of course.
Let's be clear. That's self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
Does everybody have it in them to murder someone?
No.
Absolutely. I do not think so.
I'm with you. A premeditated, cold-blooded murder? No.
Yeah.
But you know who says that?
Who?
Murderers.
Right. They'd like to believe they're just like us.
Right. They're just like us.
Candace, you've covered so many murders and murderers. And I know that many of them have started with good love gone bad. So can you tell me a little bit more about the mentality of a partner who snaps and ultimately kills their spouse?
Well, let me be clear. Nancy did not snap. Nancy did kill her husband, even though to this day she denies it. She did not snap, and there's plenty of evidence of that. My definition of snapping is you're already on the edge with stress, possibly depression, being hounded, nagged, something like that. And that camel can only handle what it has, and one more straw will break its back. That is a snap. What Nancy did, she didn't snap at all. She was number one, as you've talked about the fact, every single one of her, five or six romance suspense novels involves a woman that killed her husband. She writes a blog for the whole world to see, if they wanted to, how to kill your husband. She just didn't wake up one morning and do this. And by the way, people don't just wake up one day and become someone that they are not, or do something that they would never otherwise do. These kinds of things are in the making for years.
I'm dying to know, do you think Nancy will ever confess the truth to anyone?
No. And it has to do with one word that we've already mentioned, narcissist. To admit she did it would tarnish her image that she has of herself and that she wants the public to have of her, which is why to this day, wearing an orange jumpsuit, she's saying the jury got it wrong. She didn't kill him.
Because that would suggest that the narcissist screwed up. If they have gone to jail, they didn't pull off the perfect crime.
Right.
I can almost imagine if she had pulled off the crime, that she might whisper it at some point to someone.
Yes, good point.
Look at how clever I am.
And many killers do. And that, by the way, that's how a lot of them get caught.
The question that we discussed on the side was, if Nancy had gotten away with this, if she'd had a $1.4 million payout and been able to live out the rest of her years in relative comfort and ease, what would she have done about her writing career? I speculated that perhaps she would have spent the money on editors, publicists, people who could make her books up to snuff.
I totally agree.
Because then you get the accolades and the attention of being an author.
Which is an absolute requirement for a narcissist, mm-hmm. to be the center of attention, to be admired, respected, envied by others. And she was never able to achieve that. Heidi, thank you so, so much. This has been a wonderful conversation. I urge everyone to listen to the podcast, Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy. It is great. Thank you.
My pleasure, Candace. Such a treat to talk to you finally.